You're listening to the Party in the Back podcast with John Kudo. The Party in the Back podcast is brought to you by Mascot Link. Connect with your biggest fans now with Mascot Link. In-seat visits, VIP experiences, holiday deliveries, and paid scoreboard messages. Mascot Link's powerful software gives you the tools to create memories for fans while generating revenue for your team. Visit mascotlink.com. That's mascot-link.com to get started.
Welcome to the Party in the Back podcast. I'm your host, John Kudo. If sports marketing was a mullet, the business in the front would be forecasting budgets and measuring ROI, but the party in the back of that mullet would be invisible first pitches, baby goats, and gobbling glizzies during an in-game feeding frenzy. And we are here for that fun side of sports marketing on the Party in the Back podcast. This month on the Party in the Back, Dan Mears isn't just a mascot. He's a storyteller, an athlete, a motivator, and a community icon. Through athleticism, resilience, inspiration, and boundless heart, he turned Casey Wolf into a beloved symbol both on the field and far beyond it. We talk about his amazing 35-year career right here on the podcast. Don't forget to check out the homepage too this month on GameOps.com. Fans crave connection with their favorite players. We look at the power of parasocial relationships in sports and how to tap into it. It's the power of parasocial relationships in the blog. We've got the fever, and the only prescription is more cowbells. We've got them. We have all the highlights in our imprinted segment. We recap our huddle from Farron Benjamin and Alexandra Pope from Tagboard. Get your social media to work for you in-game. Tremendous insights from Tagboard. Check that out. High five from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Five ways the Pirates made their show great. But first, let's get the party going with the legendary Dan Mears.
What happens when you dedicate your life to joy dressed as a giant wolf? Well, today we'll sit down with Dan Mears, the outgoing Casey Wolf, the NFL's longest tenured mascot, from Super Bowl sidelines to a life-threatening stunt gone wrong. We'll talk to Dan about what it means to inspire fans, lift spirits, and stay true to your mission, win or lose, and how to build a career that spans four decades in costumes. It's our first chance to talk to him. I've heard several great interviews with Dan, including Between the Fur with Ken Solomon. If you want to hear more about Dan's career, his philanthropy, his 35 years in costume, and how a near-death injury shaped his career, give a listen to that great podcast with Ken Solomon. I'll have that podcast link on the podcast page as well, and I encourage you to check that out for more with Dan Mears. But enough about Ken Solomon and his podcast. Again, welcome the star of the show. Welcome, Dan Mears. It is an honor to talk with you, and I look forward to digging in today.
Hey, well, I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's great, and Dan's driving back from a speech in Chicago, so we're excited to have him. And stay safe on the road, Dan. That's the most important thing here. And by the time this is posted, we may be referring to you as the former Casey Wolf. So, congrats on your twice over Hall of Fame career.
I tell you what, it's they say time flies when you're having fun, and if it's one thing, I've had a lot of fun over the last 35 years, and so it's can't believe it's been that long, but seems like it's gone by really quick.
That's awesome. Let's dive in. Let's get a little taste of the Dan Mears experience. You know, I want to start at the beginning, which is a good place to start usually. You started as Truman with the University of Missouri and then spent a year as Fred Bird with the St. Louis Cardinals, making you a two-sport superstar. We need to note that right off the jump. Look at the Bo Jackson of mascots.
Right. So, you know, it's funny. When I was in high school, I played sports. I played baseball, basketball, and football. And when I say played, I should go ahead and let you know, I basically sat on a bench in baseball, basketball, and football. So I had a lot of opportunity to watch mascots over the years. And but when I went to college, of course, I wasn't good enough to play at that level. And so one day I was sitting around reading the school newspaper, And I saw that they were going to have tryouts to be Truman the Tiger. And I thought, well, that sounds kind of interesting. So I went to this informational meeting and then I tried out. Sure enough, I got the job. And for the next 4 years, I ran around in a tiger suit at Mizzou and just had a great time doing football and basketball and other sporting events. And then when I graduated, you know, I tell people, most people graduate magna cum laude. I graduated thank the laude. And so somehow managed to get my first professional gig with the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team as a character called Fred Bird. And that's the team I grew up. I grew up in St. Charles, Missouri, which is only about 30 minutes from St. Louis. And so that was kind of a dream come true, getting to run around in a Fred Bird suit. But as you know, in baseball, they play 81 home games in the summer. And football, they play 10 home games in the fall and the winter. And so when I got that call from the Kansas City Chiefs, I didn't have to think too hard about whether I wanted to switch to being a football mascot. And so moved to Kansas City, and the rest is history, as they say.
Well, you are a smart man, although I will say, and I've done this as well, the value of cheering for your childhood city and your childhood team, there's something really special about that. So I love that you got a chance to experience that in St. Louis.
Yeah, I've always been a big Cardinals fan, and even after moving to Kansas City, the good news is the Cardinals play in the National League,
yeah.
The Royals play in the American League. So I can cheer for both until they play each other, and then secretly I cheer for the Cardinals.
Well, hey, looking back at that time when you were Truman and Fred Bird, how did those early years, the early mascot roles that you had, how did that shape your work as KC Wolf and shape the way you built KC Wolf into more than just a sideline character?
Well, you know, for me, it was kind of interesting because it's not like I set out to become a mascot. I just kind of stumbled into this thing. And so those first couple of years as Truman, I was just like, hey, let's go out and have fun. And then, you know, they have college mascot competitions. And I was a broadcast journalism major. And for these mascot competitions, what you would do is you'd take film that, and my dad, he'd follow me around at parades, or he'd shoot video of me at Mizzou football games or basketball games. Well, I could take all these videos that he had shot, and I could edit them down. And I don't know back then that I was a great mascot, but I was pretty good at editing film to make myself look like I was a great mascot. And so I started to compete in these college mascot competitions. And in, I think it was 1988, I took second in the nation. I lost to Buzz the Yellow Jacket out of Georgia Tech. So Tiger lost to a guy in a bumblebee outfit, basically. And then 1989, I took first that year, beat Zippy the Kangaroo out of Akron University in Ohio. And then in 1990, I finished second again. I lost to the Buffalo out of Marshall University in West Virginia. And that's when, after I'd competed in those, I started to think, you know what, maybe I could actually make a living doing this for a short time. And that's kind of what got me started on this mascot journey of mine.
And so did you, when you were Fred Bird and Truman the Tiger, were you doing a lot of skit work, or was this a lot of stuff in the crowd and just kind of the freewheeling crowd improv?
I did a lot of freewheeling up in the crowd. That was that was always my favorite thing to do. Some guys don't like to go up in the crowd much. I love doing the crowd work, getting up there with them, and we still do some skits down there for like timeouts and things like that. But I also loved getting up into the crowd and hanging out with all the fans.
Well, I think about this a lot. I've been in costume for about a similar run. And through that time, things have changed an incredible amount on the field, off the field, and just how you present yourselves and a lot of times the tools you have and whatnot. So can you talk a little bit about how the fan expectations, game day presentation, and the mascot's role? You can take any one of those you want. How that's changed since you started in the early 90s?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's just been, like I said, what I've learned is just go out and have fun, because if you're having fun, then the people that are watching you are like, okay, that mascot's fun. And so,
yeah.
But it has definitely changed over the years. Some of the stuff that we used to be able to get by with back in the early 90s is just would not be acceptable today. And I'm not sure how to expound on that without getting myself into trouble, to be perfectly honest with you. But yeah, there's just certain things where back the mascot could kind of get by with much more
sure.
than you can now, especially with social media. And just, unfortunately, it just seems like everything is high drama in our society today. But yeah, and then, but over the years, you know, it's just been interesting to me. You can, I mean, with technology today, you can incorporate all the video stuff and the music and being a broadcast journalism major, that kind of helped me too, because I was able to, you know, edit stuff together for skits.
Yeah.
So it's definitely evolved over the years, that's for sure. Along with the costume, I tell people, when I started with the Chiefs, we were just full body fur from top to bottom, had these big, heavy, rubber-like shoes that I would wear. And, I mean, the costume was just heavy and hot. And about 15, 16 years into my career, I'm like, you know what? Anything that's covered up with a jersey or pants, I could probably make that mesh, and it would be a lot lighter weight, and plus it wouldn't be near as hot. Now, like I said, I graduated thank the latte, not magna cum laude. So I don't know why it took me 15 years to think of that, but when it finally clicked, I'm like, you know what? I think I just LinkedIn my career here.
Yeah, those early costumes, it was not performer friendly in any way.
No, not at all. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of hit both to me. It's like, to me, it's so much harder because the how you present humor and how you make, you know, kind of present comedy and tell stories has changed so dramatically, where there's sensitivities about virtually everything that I think were sort of skipped over in the 80s and 90s. but then there's things that are just so much easier. And I tell this story to people all the time. And for, you know, anybody under probably 40, they're just like scratching their head thinking I'm crazy. But I remember clearly days where I was like, I need to go find a track of music where I knew a song and I had to go find it. And you were just driving around, you know, I live in the Twin Cities. I'm driving around trying to find a music store to buy the CD. And it would be, I mean, I remember spending 2 days of just searching for this.
Right.
And that's, you know, 2 full days of driving around getting nothing else accomplished. Whereas now that's a 30-second download. And, you know, if it takes that long.
Yeah. So I remember those days as well. So I remember we'd record our skits on, and it was all VHS tapes. And then I finally had just like a whole tub full of skits and VHS tapes, and had to pay to get all those converted over to DVD. Well, now I don't even know if I've got a DVD player in my house anymore. So I'm going to have to pay somebody again to get them converted to the next thing.
That's where they get you. That's where they get you, Dan.
Exactly.
Well, hey, so you've talked a lot about just the fun, that you're presenting fun and you're having a good time. And mascot work can be so much more than fun and games. And I think Casey Wolf's a great example of that. Was there a turning point in your career when you realized, hey, I could do so much more than crowd work and entertaining, but that I can impact some lives?
Yes. And that's And that has been what has kept me in this job as long as it has, because when I first took the job with the Chiefs, I knew it was a platform, you know, not only for entertaining and putting smiles on people's faces, but I'm like, there's a lot of young people, kids and elementary students that look up to you just because you run around in a furry costume. And so early on, you know, the big mascot rule is not to be seen without your costume on. But I kind of broke that rule. I would do school programs where I would go out, start off in my costume as the kids were coming into the gymnasium or auditorium or wherever they did their programs. And I'd be slapping high fives and just entertaining. And then they would introduce me and I would actually pop my hand out of the costume, eventually take my head off and introduce myself. And then I would show the kids a short video of just a highlight mascot video. And that gave me a chance to take the costume the rest of the way off. And then I would come back up and kind of introduce myself as a person, tell them how I got started as a mascot, and then give them a message. And it was everything from character education, just making good choices and living life with a positive attitude and treating others with respect, to fitness and nutrition. We had programs on test taking, we had reading programs and say no to drug programs, and just all kinds of different programs that I would do. And that's when I started to realize, you know what, the teachers would tell me, they're like, you know what, we tell these kids the exact same thing, but it seems to mean more coming from you, just because you have a costume on and you're tied in with the local professional football team. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to realize that this mascot thing is more than just entertaining. It's actually a platform to be able to go out and to make a positive impact in the lives of others. And for me, it started out with young people at elementary schools. And then I still remember when I got my first call to do a junior high school, and that terrified me. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Yes.
Because I don't know if you've ever talked to junior high kids, and I'm like, okay, what am I doing? But after I'd done a few junior highs, I'm like, you know what? These kids are actually kind of fun, because they're just they're squirrely at that age and they're just fun, but they still are listening. And then that turned into speaking at high schools. And speaking at a high school is kind of like speaking at a nursing home. You wonder if anything, you know, they're sitting there with that look on their face. And I'm like, am I got you completely bored, or are you getting anything out of this? But yeah, they seem to respond well to that. So, yeah, it's just kind of been a progression where one thing led to the next. And next thing you know, now I'm doing corporate speaking. And that's, you know, when I found out that adults are just big kids. So if you tell them stories, show them pictures, make them laugh, and then have a good message, you'll get invited back to speak at places. So
I love it. I love it. Well, as you say all this, I just keep thinking, like, I know a lot of teams, a lot of mascots. If a mascot went in and said to his team, like, you know what, I'm going to do a school show today, but I'm thinking about just popping my head off and giving them a positive message, that those front offices would sort of freak out. And
right.
So I'm really curious. I love how the progression happened, and obviously it's been a wildly successful shift for you, and obviously kind of built on your career into being much, much more than a guy, you know, entertaining in fur. But what was their reaction with the Chiefs when you first started kind of making that shift? And how did you approach that with them, and what was their reaction?
Yeah, when I took the job, I told them I wanted to be able to go out and do programs and stuff. And it was what I've loved about the Chiefs, and I don't just say this because they've given me a paycheck twice a month for 35 years now, but they have always been extremely supportive of everything I've done. The Hunt family, the owners of the Chiefs, mm-hmm. are just fantastic people. I can't say enough good things about it. When I started with the Chiefs, it was Lamar Hunt and Norma Hunt, his wife. And now it is Clark Hunt, who is Lamar's son. And the apple didn't fall very far from that tree, because he is just I just love the ownership group. And they've just been very supportive of everything that I've talked to them about. And I'm not saying that my way is the best way. I'm not saying that it would work for every team or organization, but it has worked very well for us here in Kansas City. I do know that. So
that's incredible. I love that. And like you said, I love when people are building a program that kind of makes sense for them and for their community. And a lot of times people look across sports and say, like, well, that guy's doing this, I want to do that same thing. And that may not, you know, that may just be the opposite of what your team is trying to accomplish. So I love that they gave you that growth, but also I love that it was like, it made sense for you.
Yeah. And I think that every time we have a NFL mascot conference, we'll get together and it's just all the teams with mascots. We're sitting around talking. And when you go to those conferences, you kind of pick, you're like, okay, that might work. That's, we could probably do that. And then there's other things that work in their particular city. And I'm thinking, there ain't no way that's ever going to fly in Kansas City. And so, but you go to those conferences and you kind of pick and choose what would work well. And you spend enough time in with your organization or in your city, and you'll get a pretty good read on what's going to work, what wouldn't work. So.
Was there ever a moment for you where you just sort of sat back? You know, I think when you're the Tiger or you're Fred Bird, you're like, hey, this is fun. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm getting paid. Was there ever a moment or a point in time where you just said, you know what, this is going to be what I do for a really long time? And yeah. and looking back, was there some kind of unglamorous behind the scenes lesson that helped shape that and give you that window into like, this is going to be something that lasts a long time for me?
You know, it's interesting because when I first took the job, I honestly thought I would do it for a couple of years and then go get a real job like everybody else. And so you do it a couple years and then you're like, okay, this is fun. And I mean, the Chiefs were, the NFL were great to work with. They had a pension and a 401k and health insurance. And I'm like, okay, that's all those big boy things that I'm supposed to get when I get a job and I'm having fun. So I'm like, should I feel guilty that I'm doing all these fun things plus getting all these big boy perks that go with it? And so I'm like, I'd be stupid to go and try a different job when I've got a job that I currently love. And so next thing you know, 2 years turns into 5 years, and then 5 years turns into 10 years. And then you're like, well, if I stick it out 15 years, then I'm fully vested and all this stuff. So next thing you know, you've been there 15 years, and then, 15 turns to 20 to 20. Well, 24 was kind of a pivotal year for me too, because that was 2013 when I got hurt doing a stunt. And when I say got hurt, I did it upright. I spent 6 months off work doing therapy and rehab after a bungee jump zip line that didn't turn out real well. But after 24 years, I was doing the rehab, and I'm like, who wants to stop at 24 years when 25 is your, anniversary, 25 year anniversary? So I just made up my mind that year I'm going to work hard to get back in shape during that 6 month period. And it's interesting because as hard as that year was, that year also shaped me in many, many ways, I would say. You know, you learn some of your greatest lessons in life during the hardest seasons of life. And nobody wants to go through the hardest seasons, but when you go through them, you can learn a lot of great lessons. And finally, I'm like, well, you know what? If I'm ever going to write a book, now's the time to do it, because I wasn't performing in costume because I was still doing rehab. And so I sat down and wrote a book. And funny thing about writing a book is if you write a book, people think you're smarter than you really are. And so you become not only a speaker, but you're an author and a speaker, which somehow gives you street credibility. And so
I'm going to tell that to Rob Whitehall next time I talk to him.
Exactly. And so, and then when I wrote the book, we made up our minds that, you know, any money we make off of book sales, I was just going to give it away. I was going to give it away to charity and did a lot of work with food banks and still do a lot with homeless shelters and orphanages all over the world. And that kind of shaped me that year, realizing that, number one, that life's a contact sport. There's going to be times where we do face adversity and challenges and obstacles, and we're going to have failures. But life's also a team sport, that we need each other. And, I was just so grateful to have an organization that was there to help me recover. And then my of course, my family, my wife, my kids, my parents, my in-laws, and then just friends from my neighborhood, my church, my coworkers, and so I was just reminded that just how important that life really is a team sport, and that we need each other, you know. And then finally, the other thing it taught me, and this is the one that I'm just passionate about now, is that life was never meant to be a spectator sport. That we're not called just to sit around and watch from the sidelines. That if we're gonna make an impact with our lives, we got to be willing to get in the game and get in there and make an impact in the lives of others. Because you don't do that just sitting on the sidelines. So,
awesome messages all woven into one simple answer there. I love that.
Well,
hey, so our mutual friend Andrew Johnson from the Houston Texans shouts you out. In fact, he has a post I read today on Instagram as his mentor, and you provided a life altering connection. You talked about the school shows earlier. Andrew Johnson was somebody who was one of the kids who high-fived you on the way in, and after you took your costume off, you looked for a volunteer, and he tried it on, and he realized that day, he's like, this is what I want to do, much like a lot of us who found that kind of window, like, that looks like something I'd like to try. So in this last part of your career, how did you approach mentoring others, especially younger mascots or team staff, and pass on some of these lessons that you had learned and that you wanted to share with people like Andrew and other people on your team?
Yeah, well, Andrew Johnson is just a great guy. And I hope he's not listening, because he might get a big head if he hears me say that. But anyway, just a great guy. I remember meeting him at his elementary school, and then he went on to become his high school mascot. And he used to call me on the phone. He'd find out that KC Wolf was going to be making an appearance at the local grocery store, and he would call me and ask if he could come up in his high school mascot costume and follow me around. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want to do, come right ahead. So
how long until you get your telephone number changed?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. This kid's a stalker. Maybe I should be more concerned. That's funny. But then he went on to be a college mascot, and then he came back to Kansas City and became one of my backups for a while. Mm. And I knew he's not only a great mascot, but he's just a great, great human being. And, you know, the one thing that I've tried to teach my backups, because I found out after you win a couple Super Bowls, things get really, really busy. Everybody wants you at their kid's birthday party. Everybody wants you at their wedding reception. Everybody wants you to run to their mom's nursing home. So we literally just about doubled the amount of appearances we were doing. We were doing like close to 375, 400 appearances. And we had a couple years where we were up there around that 800 mark, which that is way too many for one person to be doing.
Yeah.
And so I had several backups that would help me. But the thing I always taught those guys is our goal is to be characters with character, meaning not only to be great mascots, high energy, fun, entertaining, but we want to do this the right way. We want to be men of character, because if one guy goes out and does something stupid in a KC Wolf suit, everybody's looking, number one, at me or one of the other guys. And so, but all the guys that I hired as backups have just been just high character guys, just, you know, the kind of guys that one of my backups actually, this tells you how much I respected him. I actually let him take my daughter to a dance in high school. And I didn't just let any guy that chews gum and knows how to dance take my daughter to a dance. I kind of checked him out good beforehand, but he is that tells you how much older I was than him, but just a great, great kid. And yeah, he became one of my backups, but he went to a high school dance with my daughter. So those
amazing.
Are the kind of guys that I hire as backups. So,
well, I love the character element and how important that is to you. But on a more, you know, just sort of day-to-day operational level, you know, what kind of preparation, this is, again, more like a mascot preparation, what kind of preparation did you take to the highest levels of sports, you know, moments like the Super Bowl, international games, that helped you succeed in those big high stakes moments? What were you doing? How were you preparing for those big events and those big games?
Well, I think because the question I get a lot is, how in the world do you do this for 35 years? And I think if people walked into my basement and saw the stationary bike that I have pedaled for thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, I'm actually on my fourth bike at this point, because I can get about 8 to 9 years out of them before the pedal starts falling off or it gets all wonky on me. And so I've been riding these Schwinn Aerodyne bikes, and but I am currently on my fourth one. And I remember one year I literally biked across America, but I did it on a stationary bike. So I would track how many miles I biked each day, and I added it up, and I biked 3,500 miles that year. Now, that was my all-time record. Once I got into my 50s, I was biking more like 2,000 miles or 1,800. It kind of depended on how many appearances I was doing, because just running around in a costume at appearances also is a good workout and will keep you in shape. And so, but I think that was the main thing, is just making sure that you're keeping your, you know, eating healthy, all those things I was preaching to kids when I went out and spoke at schools, you know, eat a healthy diet and exercise and, you know, get your rest and get your sleep. And so, but then just always looking for the next thing that's going to make them laugh, whether it's a costume. You know, I've got a great seamstress in Kansas City who has made me look good for a long time. So, I mean, she has made me all kinds of superheroes: Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Captain America. I've got tuxedos. I've told you, I've walked five women down the aisle on their wedding day, dressed in a mascot costume. I've been best man, I think, in about 10 or 11 weddings, and I didn't even know who the groom was. Last year I got to be a flower girl, got to drop petals coming down the aisle before the bride. So it's, I tell people, if you got the money, I got the time. So.
Well, those are great tips, both conditioning and then just the focus. And again, it's funny because it's like just the first answer to the question we asked at the top. And it's like, what are you trying to do? You're like, I'm just trying to make them laugh. And so it's like conditioning and try to find ways to keep making them laugh, which is awesome.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I tell young mascots, so don't overthink this. We are dudes that wear carpeting on our body. And so don't overthink this. Just go out and have fun. If you're high energy and you're having fun, people are going to notice. And so that's what I just try to remind myself when I start to get stressed out over this, that, and the other. I'm like, you're a dude in a costume. Put on your costume. Go out there and dance like you got rhythm. And I don't really have rhythm. I'm just kind of a seizure and fur, honestly. I just get all the body parts working and get them moving. And so that's, my kids are like, Dad, you're not a very good dancer. I'm like, I know that, but hey, for 35 years I've been getting paid to do this. So
exactly. Well, Dan, you're clearly a talented speaker and a storyteller, so this answer may surprise nobody, but I will ask anyway. So Casey Wolf gave you a platform as a mascot. He ironically gave you a voice and a mission. How are you going to use that momentum in this next chapter of your life? And what does life out of costume, what is that going to look like for you?
Well, I definitely intend to continue making an impact with my life. You know, I got a quote on my desk at Arrowhead that says, life is like a coin. You can spend it any way you wish, but you're only going to spend it one time. So spend it wisely. And I love that quote because it reminds me every day that I get to make choices. I get to choose how I'm going to live my life. I get to choose how I'm going to, invest my coin. And, the thing I've learned is that life is most rewarding when I am investing it in others. My parents taught me this growing up, too, that your life is kind of like your finances. You can do one of two things with money. You can spend it or you can invest it. Money you spend, you never see again, but money you invest, that's wise. That'll eventually multiply and return to you. And when you think about it, hey, we're going to do the same thing with our lives. You're either going to spend it or you're going to invest it. And a life that's just spent selfishly, like so many people do, that's wasted. But a life that's invested in helping others, encouraging others, influencing others, impacting others, that's going to bear fruit for a long, long time. And so at the end of the day, I hope that's what people remember me for. I'm not out to impress people. I'm out to impact people. Because if all I'm doing is out trying to impress people, well, I'm doing this for the wrong reason. But if I'm out there trying to impact people, you know what? That leads to a rewarding life. At the end of the day, I just want on my tombstone, if all that ever write on my tombstone is that guy loved God and that guy loved people, I'd be good with that. I figure that's a life lived well.
That's amazing. And so in terms of the day-to-day, I know today you're coming fresh off the speech. Are you going to be speaking all over the U.S., spreading the good word?
As long as people keep inviting me, I'll continue to speak because I do a lot of corporate speaking, which is a lot of fun, and I always enjoy doing that. I also became a grandpa this year, so not once, twice. So I've got two granddaughters now. And I went from being I was a full-time mascot, part-time grandpa. And I finally this year realized, you know what, I want to be a full-time grandpa and a part-time mascot. And so that's what I've chosen. And my wife had some health issues these past couple of years. And so I wanted to make sure I was around for her if she chose to get injured. So. I just knew this was the time. And thankfully, the Chiefs are going to allow me to stick around and be a backup wolf, which is nice. So I don't have to do all the emails, phone calls, and wedding coordinator text messages. I can let somebody else handle all that. And I can just get back to putting on a costume and going out and having a good time.
That is incredible. So when the roar of the crowd fades, Dan Mears, and the fur comes off, is there a habit that you learned from your years being Casey Wolf that's going to help you guide the rest of your days and in the real world outside of a fur costume?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's, you know, I've always told people that Casey Wolf is just what I do. It's not who I am. Okay. Anybody that knows me very well knows I got three priorities in life. It's my faith, my family, and just using my life to make an impact in the lives of others. And it all starts with my faith. So my identity is not in being Casey Wolf. You know, it's not in my achievements or accomplishments or anything else in life. My identity is found in my relationship with Christ. And I tell folks all the time, any good you see in my life, that's Jesus. Any bad you see in my life, that's me. I'm still a work in progress, trust me. But I'm a lot further along than I used to be, thank goodness. But yeah, I'll continue just to go out and hopefully use my life to impact others. And, you know, whether that's in a furry costume or not in a furry costume, you know, but every day we get a chance to be influencers. You know, Taylor Swift's kind of a big deal around Kansas City right now since she's dating our tight end. But, you know, the thing I've learned, though, is that you don't have to have a million followers on social media. You don't have to have your own personal brand to be an influencer. You think about it, we get the opportunity to be an influencer anytime you step into a room, anytime you have an interaction with another person. Whether it's in a costume or not in a costume, you have the opportunity to be an influencer. And that's what I hope to accomplish. You know, just want to continue to go out there and be the best version of me I can be. I tell my kids, God didn't wake me up today to be mediocre, and he didn't wake them up today to be mediocre either. So whatever I pursue next, whether it's speaking or backup mascotting, I'm going to give it everything I've got. So I'm going to run this race hard till the end.
I love it. Where can people find more about your speaking work?
You know what? If you go to danmears.org, so danmears.org, Mears has two E's in it. So if you spell M-E-A-R-S, I have no idea what you're going to find. But if you spell Dan Mears, M-E-E-R-S, you should see a guy that looks a little bit like Casey Wolf. So.
Well, I preach all the time that it's about reps and it's about doing what you do over and over again that makes you better at it. And clearly you've been talking to people and inspiring people for years and impacting kids. And it's clear that you're you got your reps in there. So, Dan, I appreciate everything you've done and congratulations on a spectacular career. I look forward to your message and your speaking as you keep chugging along and keep that Aerodyne bike tuned up, man. Looks like you're going to need to be in shape for a longer run here.
That's my goal. So I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for having me on.
Bill Veeck said, it isn't enough for a promotion to be entertaining or even amusing. It must create conversation. We follow that conversation at the GameMops.com water cooler. Monday through Friday, look at a moment created by a sports team and see how it got fans talking. These daily posts are a great way to kickstart some creative thinking for your own show. Look for the water cooler text scroll on our homepage or follow us on Twitter for the daily update.
That's right. Don't miss the daily water cooler on GameOps.com. Promotions, themes, giveaways, activations that got people talking. In June, we added over 20 water coolers and we even updated our water cooler graphic. It's so important we put it on every page right there on the top right. Click it now and get caught up on those 1,808 posts at the water cooler. This month, we marveled at how the Vancouver Canadians shared their superhero night success. We looked at Goblin Glizzies in Salem, a Jimmy Carter bobblehead in Georgia. The goat was in the house in Reading and why that made so much sense there. Fresh off our Venn diagram discussion of humor last month, we looked at an example in Madison where they leaned into the violation to make people laugh and how Melbourne FC used a live violin to spark a huge fan reaction. That's Monday through Friday at the water cooler. That is a wrap for the July 2025 edition of the Party in the Back podcast on GameOps.com. Thank you for listening. Keep an eye out on the homepage and Twitter and Instagram for more new and exciting content. I encourage you to visit the homepage for all the new and good stuff. Big thanks to everyone who listens, reads, and supports us here at GameOps.com. And thank you for spreading the word about this podcast. Join us again next month at the Party in the Back with more talk and analysis about the fun side of sports marketing. For my guest, Dan Mears, congratulations on an incredible career. Shouts out to Little Sox, Louie, Brick Brickman, and Mrs. Lee. This is John Kudo signing off, but please, let's keep the party going.
Thanks for joining us on the Party in the Back podcast. We'll see you next time.